Hello, everybody. This is Parrish Alford of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal, and you are listening to Double Coverage, a Daily Journal production, a podcast featuring Ole Miss and Mississippi State. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our MSU beat writer. Logan, how are you, man?
Overworked at this point. Yeah, as you know, Parrish, it's that time of the year when sports start to overlap, and you just kind of have to deal with it this time of year.
Logan, it's why they just throw cash at us every 2 weeks.
Right.
And that's why. You know, because I noticed that you said overworked, but you didn't follow that up with underpaid, because we know that's not true.
Right. Okay. Yeah, just bankrolled over here. Just
that's right. That's right.
Money.
It's what we do, folks. And look, it still beats working for a living. That's why we're here.
Absolutely.
And we got a big Mississippi State-Alabama football game to talk about in just a moment. We got some Ole Miss heartbreak that we're going to talk about. Looking back at the Rebels' 2-overtime loss at home against Arkansas last week. Ole Miss has a bye week right now after 10 straight weeks of playing football on Saturday. The Rebels get a week off to kind of heal, but also to really focus on an important game coming up against LSU in Oxford on November 21st. We're going to talk Mississippi State and Alabama. We'll throw a little basketball out there as well. First, Logan, let's look at this this 2-overtime loss for Ole Miss, 53-52 against Arkansas. You know, as the game was rolling along there and neither team could stop the other and most every possession was ending in a touchdown, you know, I mentioned on Twitter, I said, hey, folks, remember, wasn't that long ago that these two guys, well, I guess it was long ago. I think it was 2001, so now that's about 14 years ago. These teams played 7 overtimes. It took 7 overtimes before Ole Miss and Arkansas could determine a winner. I was covering the state beat at the time, Logan. I remember driving back from Starkville listening to that Ole Miss and Arkansas game on the radio. I really was, number one, didn't think the game was going to go 7 overtimes and was glad it didn't. I was hopeful that it wouldn't get to overtime, but it did. And when it did, what a bizarre finish. The most bizarre that I have covered in my career. You know, you get a team backed up to 4th and 25, and you think you're gonna pull it off, and it looks like you know, the Rebels had done that. Dave Womack has received a lot of criticism in the wake of the Arkansas loss, the Ole Miss defensive coordinator, but he's gotten part of that criticism has come from his coverage, his play call on 4th and 25 when he dropped a lot of defenders into coverage. But I'm thinking, man, you know, there were a lot of calls that didn't work in that game. You know, there were a lot of Arkansas receivers that got open. There was a lot of pinpoint passing from Arkansas quarterback Brandon Allen, a lot of touchdown passes, no turnovers. But that call worked. On 4th and 25, you drop everybody into coverage. You know, you force Arkansas to throw the ball underneath. They did. They were about 10 yards short of the first down, and you got the Ole Miss guys rushing up to make the tackle. And everything worked except getting Arkansas tight end Hunter Henry all the way to the ground. He was able to throw the lateral, throw the backwards pass, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got the ball finding Arkansas's best running back in Alex Collins, and you know, and he gets behind what turned out to be a wall of blockers and makes the first down yardage, and the rest is history. I thought Arkansas would just go on in and score very quickly after that, but Ole Miss had one more chance to end the game on a 2-point conversion when it looked like they had Allen sacked with Marquise Haynes, but Haynes was called for face mask, so that moved the ball, you know, from the 3-yard line even closer, and Arkansas converted the 2-point conversion and won the game. Yeah, I look at that game, Logan, and, you know, my first thought is, you know, Ole Miss didn't lose that game in overtime. You know, there were some fluky things that happened. I mean, they lost it with so many missed opportunities earlier in the game, but they really, you know, they played their best defense on Arkansas's overtime possession. Before that lateral, Arkansas's possession included a diving pass breakup by Kendarius Webster, a sack by Haynes, and an incomplete pass, and a penalty. You know, Arkansas also had a delay of game in that. You know, Ole Miss could not have asked for a better defensive possession. It didn't have a better one the entire game. I mean, you put the opponent in a 4th and 25. You did everything but defend the lateral. And when the game was over, you know, we heard Trey Elston, Ole Miss's senior safety, talk about defensive players who were, quote, lollygagging in getting to the ball. And I have kind of mixed feelings on Elston's comment there. One, there was effort in getting to the ball because that's the side of the field where most of the defense was, over there where Arkansas made the catch. When the ball reversed field was when Ole Miss got in trouble. That being said, having watched the replay a few times, it did look like a couple of the Ole Miss players might have been stunned by what was taking place, and they were kind of trotting in the direction of the play, just thinking the play would end, but it didn't end. Again, I say Ole Miss didn't lose that game in overtime. They lost it when they let Arkansas pass them silly up and down the field and roll up 45 points and almost 600 yards in regulation. You know, so there are issues in the secondary, and Hugh Freeze said on Wednesday that all of those issues don't relate directly to the absence of two All-Americans from last year's team in free safety Cody Pruitt and cornerback Cinquez Golson. He gave some coach speak and a deep explanation of what's going on in the secondary, kind of hard to follow. And I don't doubt the technicalities of football are playing into what's going on, but the bottom line right now in the secondary is Freeze and Womack and that staff misevaluated two guys that they thought were going to be much better at cornerback. One of them isn't even in the program right now in T. Shepherd, and the other, Tony Bridges, just hasn't been as good as the Rebels, as the coaching staff thought they would be this year.
Yeah, and Parrish, I watched a little bit of that game Saturday with Mississippi State having the Saturday off, having played the Thursday night game against Missouri. And I watched kind of the second and third quarter, so I missed the fourth quarter and the dramatic finish in overtime. Of course, I saw plenty of replays of that. But you know, from what I saw, it looked like it was one of Chad Kelly's best games, kind of one of his best overall games passing and running the football. It's, you know, that running game is something I really haven't seen a whole lot from him. I mean, would you agree that it was one of his more complete games this year?
It was clearly his best game of the year. You know, Logan, you turn the calendar back to early September, you saw this Ole Miss offense putting up a lot of points. You saw a fast start from Chad Kelly, even when Freeze had not fully named him the starter. Remember, he split some time with Ryan Buchanan and lost a few snaps there when Devontae Kincaid was in the game back in the big wins over Tennessee Martin and Fresno State. But he came out, he played a turnover-free game as the starter against Alabama, and after 3 weeks, Chad Kelly had thrown 9 touchdown passes to only 1 interception. Well, the interceptions were about to come. They were around the corner, and the difference between Kelly and Bo Wallace most of this season is that while he has thrown some interceptions, Chad Kelly, he has continued to throw touchdown passes. But he had a turnover-free performance against Arkansas, 3 touchdown passes, matched Brandon Allen in touchdowns, but Kelly had 3 on the ground to go with his 3 in the air. I thought he did a much better job in the zone reads in that option game, and we asked him after the game if that was part of the plan. And he said, oh, just take him what the defense gives. You know, you hear that comment a lot. I have no doubt that he was encouraged to be a little more aggressive in the run game, and he picked his spots and he ran well. But also, and this is something that Chad Kelly has done all year long, he showed a lot of poise in the pocket, and when the protection was breaking down against Arkansas, he had some really big runs, and he ended up with 110 yards rushing. So it was a great game for Chad Kelly. It was easily his best game of the year, but the big thing here is that Chad Kelly had no turnovers, because if the secondary against Arkansas is what Ole Miss fans can expect in the last two games, then Ole Miss is going to have to outscore somebody. They're going to have Kelly play that way. They're going to have to win a shootout to put another game in the win column the rest of this season.
Yeah, and looking at Mississippi State's game at Missouri last week, it was coming a downpour. It's probably the hardest game that I've seen weather-wise from Mississippi State in my career. You know, at some points during that ball game, especially in the first half, it was just a monsoon coming down out there. I mean, you could hardly even see the field from the press box. And surprisingly, Mississippi State still passed the ball well during that downpour. Dak Prescott had one of his better games against Missouri, threw the ball really well, ran the ball at times, but, you know, it was a close game right there at the half. It was 14-13. Mississippi State had some mistakes that, Missouri was able to capitalize on in that first half. But kind of credit Mississippi State in that second half coming out and scoring 17 unanswered points in the third quarter and just kind of put the game away at that point. It was a close game in that first half. Could have been anybody's ball game, but Mississippi State came out, threw that first punch in the second half, drove down. They converted a key third down to Runye Wilson for about a 60-something yard pass that set up a touchdown on that opening drive of the second half. And then on the first Missouri's first play of the second half, they come up with a big interception and really just put the game away at that point. That was kind of the turning point of that ball game and turning the attention to Alabama this week. Obviously last year was a huge game for Mississippi State, probably the biggest game in school history with that number one ranking going into Tuscaloosa. And Mississippi State played tight, and they've talked about that this week, just how uptight they were in that ball game. They weren't playing loose at all. They were playing not to lose instead of playing to win over there in Tuscaloosa. They fell behind 19-0 early in that ball game, and that's really the point where they started to make a little bit of a comeback. And Mississippi State outscored Alabama 20-6 the rest of the way, but you know, when you dig that big of a deficit, especially on the road in a venue like Bryant-Denny Stadium, it's just tough to overcome. And, you know, this time around, the game's here in Starkville. It doesn't really have that same type of luster that last year's game had. You know, Mississippi State doesn't have the number one ranking, but obviously Alabama is in very much control of its own fate, having beat LSU last week. So it's a huge game for Alabama to come back in and continue to go towards that college football playoff. And Mississippi State could shock the college football world, you know, with a win in this game. And I think Dak Prescott even talked about it earlier this week that Alabama is the only SEC West team that he has not beaten in his career. And I think he wants to get one more crack at the Crimson Tide. He didn't play particularly well against Alabama last year, threw three interceptions in that ball game. And, seems like he's wanting a little bit of redemption this time around.
Well, I'll tell you someone else who it's a big game for, and that is Ole Miss. Ole Miss fans will be in the unusual position of cheering for Mississippi State to win Saturday. That's if the Rebels want to regain a chance to get to Atlanta for the SEC championship game. Logan, if Mississippi State can upset Alabama, Ole Miss is back in the position it was last week going into the Arkansas game of controlling its fate in the SEC race. That would give Alabama two losses. Ole Miss would have the tiebreaker against Alabama. LSU has only one loss, but Ole Miss plays LSU next week and could possibly pin a second loss on LSU, and if so, take the tiebreaker there. And, of course, the Rebels still have Mississippi State to play. So, you know, a big game from the Ole Miss perspective as well. Now, you talked about MSU players identifying the fact that they were tight and pressing against Alabama last year. How did they change that? What's the strategy for being a little more loose in a game that still has big implications?
Well, I think playing at home is going to help. And, yeah, I think just having the home venue, just the ease and comfort of the home crowd behind them. And plus, Dan Mullen talked about this week, too, that they've played in a big game in November now. That was kind of their first big test, you know, in the national type of spotlight last year. It's the first time they've been through all that. And, of course, Alabama, their players are used to that every single year. Mississippi State, it was brand new to them. This year they have some, you know, November games up under their belt in the national spotlight. They know how to handle it now, and you really just don't see that same type of excitement and buildup for this year's game as you did a year ago. Of course, you know, it has such national implications with the college football playoff just now coming out. The playoff poll that just came out when Mississippi State and Alabama played. And surprisingly, Parrish, over the last 25 games, Mississippi State and Alabama have the exact same record. They're both 20-5 in the last 25 games. That's the best record in the SEC. And they're the only two teams that have been ranked every single week that the college football poll has came out last year. So a lot of similarities. You know, you see Alabama in the national spotlight, deservedly so, but Mississippi State's right there with them, can match them, you know, stat for stat in those categories.
Well, a couple of other points on Ole Miss, Arkansas, a couple of good things the Rebels were able to do in that game, and then we'll turn the page to a little basketball talk, Logan, with both teams getting ready to open regular season play. You mentioned Ole Miss in the run game, and they did run it well for a third straight week last week, and ran it against an Arkansas defense that's pretty physical and had been fairly consistent in slowing the run. They finished with 222 yards. Chad Kelly was a big part of that, but Jalen Walton did well too, averaging almost 6 yards a carry. So more consistency in the run game these days for Ole Miss. That's a third straight week. Not surprisingly, the Rebels have had Laramie Tunsil back on the offensive line in each of these three games. So that's something to keep an eye on. They're going to need that run game the last couple of games of this season. And Laquon Treadwell, he did his thing against Arkansas. 7 catches, 132 yards, and a touchdown. His 5th straight game with at least 100 receiving yards and a touchdown, extending his school records in both of those categories. When I see Laquon Treadwell, Logan, the first thing I think is, Grant Hurd is an amazing coach. No, that's not the first thing I think. Grant Hurd is a good coach with talent and depth at his position beyond Treadwell, but Laquon Treadwell is really a talented player. And going back in August, he told us he felt like he would come back better, that he would come back stronger, faster, more physical. And honestly, right now, he's playing like all of those things. He's playing the way he described himself back in August. The bye week gives coaching staffs a time to look at the guys they're redshirting, their younger players, their scout team players, and some coaches turn up the heat and intensity and a lot of drills and work guys hard. That wasn't what Freeze chose to do this week. I'm sure there was some of that going on. Of course, most of practice is closed, but he did tell us a little bit about just a scrimmage, just kind of a fun game-type atmosphere that he was able to do with some younger guys, guys who will play a big part in wins and losses in the future, but right now are mostly members of the scout team. He went quickly to Jalen Julius, a cornerback who is redshirting. That's certainly a position of need right now. He was impressed with what he saw there. Also liked what he saw in offensive tackle Alex Givens, another position of need for Ole Miss next year. Here's Ole Miss coach Hugh Freeze.
Third teamers?
Anyone's on the scout team can play. It was a domination by the offensive unit.
Oh.
So they had some fun for sure. We probably worked the defensive scouts a little harder in the tempo stuff, and they looked a little more gassed. But it was fun to see everybody get to play around for sure.
Are there specific guys, or is it just a film deal where you can kind of concentrate? Like if this is your week to really look at red shirts or kind of do those kind of situations, yeah. Do you look at specific guys?
No, week? Not so much. We really did that more for the enjoyment of competing.
Okay.
We've both days this week we've been able to go a lot of endo, and that's you get everybody in that. And in one-on-ones yesterday, I thought Jalen Julius stood out, you know, in one-on-ones at corner. I think he's going to be a really good player. And today in that deal, there were several, Lodge and Van Jefferson. We know that they're talented. Jason Pellerin and DK Buford really looked good, as did Alex Givens. And I thought Austrian played hard on the defensive side, and Sean Curtis kind of flashed a few times. But that wasn't so much to look at specific people as much as it was to just to let them compete.
Alex Givens is an interesting guy. Obviously, you're going to address the offensive line and recruiting, but he's one of those you have already. Well, how's he kind of coming along?
Oh, we're really excited about him. Great kid, going to play hard. He's got a nasty streak in him. His body's changing. Another year with Coach Jackson, and I think he'll fit in nicely with the guys that we have coming back. And it's a big year in recruiting for offensive line. We need to sign 5 to 6 guys, particularly now with Christian moving to a medical. You know, we're aiming for six if we can find the six that we feel good about.
This senior class, I mean, and you can even throw maybe a Laquan in there too, Rob, you know, because they're junior guys. I mean, what is this senior group,
you know? Very much indebted to them, you know, for they went through the lean times here and didn't have much to smile about some days. And their buy-in to us asking them to do certain things and to buy into certain core values, without that, you don't get the results that we've gotten in a short amount of time compared to a lot of programs that are trying to rebuild. So very indebted to those guys for joining us here and helping us, make competing and winning some games a new normal around here.
When you have talented third-year players like Laquan or Robert, even Tony or Evan, what do you tell them in terms of looking at the NFL draft? Do you say?
Yeah. Well, nothing yet. We've had conversations before the season, and then, you know, throughout the year when I have my individual meetings with them, we'll talk a little bit. But my encouragement to everyone is, be sure we gather the facts. And I am for you, whatever's best for you. And I've proven that, you know, with like Dante and, you know, and the kids we've had is, you know, I want them to do what is best for them and make wise choices. And so, you know, we'll help them gather exactly what the facts are when the time comes. Some are no-brainers that, when you recruited them, you told them this would be the case. Others, you need to take the process slow and make sure you make a wise decision for yourself. And as much as they will allow us to be, we would love to walk with them through it.
You've talked about how Tony, you could see him very well coming back next year. Is it hard, too, with him knowing he's going to have that surgery and knowing how it'll bleed into the process if he even wanted to make that decision?
Yeah, I don't think that's even a consideration in Tony's mind right now. I think that's maybe the media talks about it, but Tony and I have talked, and I don't think that he's even thinking in those terms. He's thinking, let me get myself well and come have a great senior year. And I think Evan's kind of thinking the same thing, too, we'll gather all the facts, but, you know, for Tony, I think he's thinking the wisest thing. He told me that, so unless something changes, which it could, but believe that he's thinking, you know, right now about making the best decision would be to come back and get himself well.
Have you approached this bye week differently than maybe some of the past, having played 10 straight games?
Yeah, typically in bye weeks, I probably have gone Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We just are going Tuesday, Wednesday, and then tomorrow's a lift day and a little run. But we are practicing on Sunday instead of just having a – so they basically have two practices and then some time off, and then we'll bring them back Sunday and have a practice, get an extra Tuesday type practice in for LSU.
How's Eric Swinney been handling rehab?
Good. Yeah, Paul's real happy. We went up. We go over him once a week, and you know he's coming along nicely.
You were real excited about him. I mean, in terms of he's fully healthy. What kind of game did he have?
Well, I mean, I hadn't seen him. He hadn't gotten to practice with us at all. But I loved what I saw, you know, in high school. And I tell you, DK Buford looked good today too. You know.
Has he impressed you just more and more each week?
He has, and his body's changing. He's losing the weight that he needed to lose and get back down. So, I'm excited about the future at a lot of positions when we obviously got to address some in recruiting.
With Sanquez and Cody, losing those two guys from the secondary last year, how big of a loss was that for the
season? You know, it's hard to tell. Some games we played really well, some we haven't played well. Is that a result? I mean, anytime you lose good players, it's you're going to miss them to some extent. But every program does that, and you got to replace them. Hopefully you don't miss on too many in recruiting, and you're able to coach them and get the most out of them and get them to play with confidence. And so I think it's just a mixture of things. But yeah, we miss guys like that. But There's a lot of moving parts to it. It's really simple for a lot of people just to say, well, it's Sanquez and Golson, but there's backers also that are involved in carrying receivers that close the windows some that you have to guard, and the window's not quite as big, and you know, we kind of got a combination of all that going on when we don't play well. So I wouldn't sit here and say it's just on those guys.
Talking basketball a little bit, Ole Miss opening up against Northwestern State Friday at 4 o'clock. The Rebels scored 105 in an exhibition against Clayton State, but Andy Kennedy was not pleased with Ole Miss's defensive showing. The Rebels gave up 50% three-point shooting in the second half. 50% overall. Clayton State was 8 for 13 in the second half, so more than 50% from three-point range then. And they're going to face a very experienced Northwestern State team. The Demons were 19-13 a year ago, but they're returning two very experienced guards in Jalon West and Zeke Woodley, who averaged a combined 42.2 points last year, and West shot 42.2% from three-point range on 204 attempts. Kennedy sees some similarities in this team and Charleston Southern, which defeated Ole Miss on opening night last year. So, you know, that game still in the back of his mind there, but a big challenge for Ole Miss right out of the gate. So what's State got to open up with?
Well, Mississippi State opens up with Eastern Washington, and it's a very competitive team. I believe they made the NCAA tournament last year. I really hadn't even got into the research on them. I've been so bogged down with football stuff going on. And, of course, I've got to leave here in just a few minutes and go to the memorial service for Keith Joseph, the Mississippi State freshman defensive end who lost his life last Friday in a car accident, along with his father, Keith Joseph Sr., who also played here at Mississippi State. So I really just haven't gotten deep into basketball. I'll hit that a little bit later this afternoon. But Mississippi State opens up tomorrow night, 8 o'clock against Eastern Washington. I guess the biggest thing with basketball right now is the health of Malik Newman. He's had turf toe for the last 2 weeks. He hasn't practiced. He got the cast cut off on Tuesday, and they were going to try to practice him a little bit yesterday and see how he did with that. He is expected to play, probably not going to play a whole lot of minutes in this ball game. And they're just going to have to do without him. They won their exhibition games. They played a closed-door scrimmage against UAB, who was an NCAA team, and kind of blew him out of the gym. Which was surprisingly for Mississippi State to go out and beat a team like UAB first run, like they did, because UAB returns a lot of their talent from last year's team, and Mississippi State was able to get the win in that one. Of course, it's a closed door scrimmage; don't have any stats or anything on that. But from what I've heard, Mississippi State looked really, really good in that game, and then they come out last Friday against Fort Valley State, win 95-56. Malik Newman did not playing that game, and Quindary Weatherspoon was kind of the key to that game. He played extremely well off the bench, running the point, and that's something that we really didn't think we'd see out of Quindary this year. He's a talented freshman. We knew we were going to get a lot of minutes from him off the bench, but just seeing what he was able to do for the Bulldogs, at running the point, a position he wasn't very familiar with. And looked like a natural out there playing that. So, I know Malik Newman gets a lot of the hype for Mississippi State, but you see the things that he's able to do with, Quindary Weatherspoon, it's pretty unbelievable.
Well, Logan, good luck covering the memorial service today for the Josephs. Those are not easy events to cover. I've covered there, covered a few things like that, covered the Kiefer McGee funeral. Back after his drowning accident in the mid-90s. And, when I saw the news on the Josephs, I thought, man, I saw the time that Keith Joseph Sr., played at State, and I thought, I bet I covered him. And sure enough, he was on that 1992 team. I was covering State then from the for the Meridian Star. So when they put his mugshot up on the screen, I thought I really recognized him. So a terrible loss for the MSU family. Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage. We thank you for being with us. Be sure to check out the Daily Journal News podcast as well. That's the memo, all things going on in Northeast Mississippi with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. Thanks again for being with us on Double Coverage. We'll be back next week.